Welcome to Yak Baby, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Dr. Adventure's Video Zone. Now 23%. What does it say? 23% more porno. Yes. Oh, less porno. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
The whole thing. It's a disaster.
Lost that sponsor. Would have been nice to have that money.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Dr. Adventure's Video Zone, now with
23... You got this.
Yeah,
no, we don't. Yeah, you will eventually.
23% 23% less porn. 23% less porn. Okay. All right. 3, 2, 1.
The Yak Babies. Sex, presidents, and sometimes books.
Welcome to Yak Babies, the only podcast on the internet sponsored by Dr. Adventure's Video Zone, now with 23% less porno. My name is Aaron, here with the personal pals Dave.
Hello.
And Brick.
Hey.
You don't know how many times it took to get that out, listeners. Maybe you do. Maybe it was the pre-roll this episode.
I'll put it there.
We're back and we're talking this time about the internal critic, that little voice in your head that tells you that things aren't going so well. We discussed this initially as a reading sort of impulse or reading sort of phenomenon. The critical voice you hear in your head sort of tells you whether this book is working for you or not as you read. But I wanted to expand it to writing as well, and maybe to life in general, actually.
How deeply do you want to dive into personal anxiety and depression?
I think I'm willing to get there. This kind of came up, I guess, tangentially in our book self-discussion as well, so I'm willing to engage it. Let's start with the reading one first, though. To what extent does your internal critical voice pop up while you're reading, or do you try to just focus on the book and then kind of make up your mind at the end? Like, I feel like, for me, it's impossible to do that. I feel like I'm internally criticizing the entire time.
Wait, criticizing the writer or yourself as a reader?
The writer.
Oh.
The text itself. Like, I'm assessing and thinking and sort of responding within the moment. This is true of anything I consume, like movies, yeah. Music, books. Like, I never really have a full just, like, open-minded experience with a text, I don't think.
Yeah, if you take books as a completely passive experience, I think that's, then you're in JPAT territory, right? Where it's just, you're just sort of, it's basically a movie and not a film, but a, you know, just a brain filler.
Right.
Whereas, like, most time when I read, I consider reading to be some sort of conversation with the author, even though it's largely one-sided. I'm writing in books constantly, or at the very least, I'm underlining things and whatever. And that's part of the reason why I can't read before bed, because it's a very engaging process for me. And it's true for movies and other things as well.
Do you find it interferes with your process at all? Do you feel like, does that critical voice ever get too loud?
No, but I mean, how many years of school have I been? Like, I think that's right. That's something that I learned out of myself. I'm pretty aware of myself as a reader, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think through practicing that craft.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there any value, do you think, into disappearing into the text or trying to stifle that voice?
No, I don't find that voice is intrusive.
Right.
So if a book really hooks, like Under the Volcano did for a little bit, I think you'll see the markups of the book go way down, mm-hmm. because I'm just fully engrossed in the book. And then sometimes you pop back out or you stop and pause and go back and read a paragraph because it kind of caught you and you want to do it again.
Right.
And then that comes back. The only time I ever see that voice getting louder than the experience is a book I really fucking hate. Hmm. And in which case I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying right. what the voice has to say. So
right. Part of the entertainment value is like indulging that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dave, what about you in this regard?
Well, I was approaching this more as a discussion about the inward looking.
Oh, okay.
I think critic. That's more for the writing, for sure.
Yeah. But I guess with a book, so from that angle, with a book like Under the Volcano, for example, like I feel like I'm constantly trying to convince myself that I'm not capable of I'm not capable of comprehending a text like that. I'm not smart enough for a book like that. So, like, why even bother? Especially if it's something that I have to then come on a podcast and discuss.
Right.
Like, I try to convince myself that I'm way out of my element and, like, have no business even trying to figure out what's going on in this book.
Interesting. So, what do you think is behind that?
Just, like, self-hatred. You know, the usual. And we'll talk more about that in the writing section.
But that's interesting to me because I feel like you know, whereas writing a creative process, a generative process, there is definitely a sense of, well, I'm a, you know, a fraud or a failure. I feel like you, all of us, have read long enough and have developed a taste for long enough that you could trust in that or rely on that sort of as like, I know what I'm doing, yeah, you know, as a reader for the most part. So what do you think is the, is like a deeper self-hatred sort of manifesting there? Or is that like a specific version of like, I've never felt like I was confident in reading literature and this is just play acting until someone catches me?
Could be a little of both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I mean, when I was reviewing books, I kind of always felt the same way. Like I was,
yeah,
you know, the end product would be, you know, readable and would sound like I had things to say, but I never really felt that way.
Right.
Just like, felt like I was just inventing.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I definitely have that with criticism for sure. Like writing criticism and doing the podcast too, I always sort of second guess myself sometimes. Or I always second guess myself. Not I always do it sometimes. I just did it. But reading for pleasure, I do feel mostly confident. It's when I started thinking about, I guess when things take a bit more time, or like comics is interesting, cause like most mainstream comics, I feel pretty confident in my opinions and my responses. 100%, almost 100% there. But when it gets a bit more esoteric, all of a sudden I'm like, ah, do I get this really? Am I reading this deep enough or not? And then when you hear someone, a critic or a podcaster, or someone talk about it and they have unlocked it and you're like, oh, I get it. I wasn't reading clearly enough. That feels, it's not embarrassing. I mean, it is embarrassing, I guess, but it's more like,
I like that feeling. It makes me want to talk about it more.
Yeah, but it also makes me, I feel like I should have caught it, right? I should have figured that out. I should have been smarter. Mm. I definitely have that self-doubt, but it usually is with like the harder, like sort of more advanced level stuff. Like I felt confident with early work for sure. I knew what I was talking about with that one.
Cause it sucked.
Right. But also wasn't presenting me with any challenge. Whereas under Volcano, yeah, definitely. It felt a bit more like, do I really know what I'm going to say about this? Like, do I have enough? I think my response would be that I don't probably. Like I'm way under suited to really consuming that novel and digesting it properly. Like I have to study more. And like there's schools of scholarship on that book. So there's obviously a reason for that too. What about writing? Is it worth the same way for writing? When you write, do you sort of tell yourself that it's not working, or do you sort of let yourself give it a shot and then tell yourself it's not working later on?
It depends at what point, I guess, the critic starts talking.
Hmm.
Like, you know, it'll like attack my talent, like just like the general, you know, you're awful at writing.
Right.
Other times it'll be like with the specific thing I'm working on, like the story is stupid, these characters are pointless. And then, you know, it's like, oh, and another thing I have is when I do read a book, like Under the Volcano, for example, or even books that not even quite nearly as good as that.
Right.
It's a lot of, I get a lot of, you'll never write anything as good as this.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about, I think, before with maybe Dybbuk.
Yes,
in
absolutely.
Particular.
Yeah.
Or we talked about a particular text. I can't remember if it was Close to Chicago or even Dybbuk, but
I think it is Dybbuk, because I definitely feel with Dybbuk for sure. I mean, if we didn't talk about it, it's definitely accurate, because I do have that sense of, this is something that I would like to do, that I feel envious of.
Yeah, and incapable text. Of.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and so like, what's the point?
Yeah, but also
I'm trying.
I would strive to do that. Like, I feel like that's what I'm trying to get to in my creative work, whatever little of it is.
Yeah, right.
And just completely failing.
Right.
Like not even coming close.
And then there's another, it's like, even if my critic allows me to then finish a whole draft of a thing, then it'll say, well, you know, fine, but this will never change anyone's life. Even if you publish this thing, it doesn't matter.
Right.
It will not impact anyone at all. So, like, why try?
Right. We discussed this a bit. We talked about publishing coming down here.
Yeah.
The sort of, like, the process of getting something published, a short story, for instance. Yeah. The end result is basically no one read it.
Right.
Even if you get past the goal line there, and your story ends up featured
somehow,
in the journal.
If you somehow get past
the various obstacles in your way, if you get to that sort of achievement or success mark, then the end result or the consequences, a handful of people will have read it, maybe.
Yeah.
And then it starts over again.
Right.
And that, so there's two things here. One is adjusting the focus away from publishing, right? Or away from like readership and just towards expression, which is, I think, is very difficult to like look at a work and say, well, I did this and at least it says what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
Whether someone read it or not or cared about it or not, at least I did what I wanted to do. Like that's what Kafka did, right? Like when Kafka died, you know, he requested all the stuff be burned because he didn't want it published. He's wrote it for himself and put it in his drawer because he was too embarrassed by it. And then all of a sudden we have Kafka, right? I don't know. Brick, what about you? How does this affect your creative work?
Well, I'd say for the majority of my life, the kind of negative inner voice maybe had more influence than I would have liked on sort of not just writing, but my life.
Yeah.
And I've put a lot of effort in the last 5-10 years to wrestle that control back.
Yeah.
And now I feel pretty good about that. But part of that process was I don't care about writing anymore.
Right.
Maybe that's not part of the process. That's just another thing that happened concurrently. So when I do write, I don't have any expectations about it. Like, I have no desire to even attempt to get published. I just do it because it's a thing I like to do.
Right.
So in that regard, it doesn't bother me. Even when I maybe cared about my writing from like how it would be perceived by others, it wasn't so much this isn't good enough. Though I knew that, but that didn't deter me. It was more like, why are you doing this?
Right.
Like, it wasn't so much about the thing I was making. It was about the process I was engaging in, if that makes sense. You know what I mean?
Like, why does it take so much time, or why is this worth it?
Yeah. Like, is this worth it? Like, what are you doing?
Right.
So I don't know. But my process has always been more for writing, always been more get as much out as possible and then kind of like sculpt it down.
Right.
Which I think lends itself a little better to the gentleness of the inner critic versus really wanting to, like, I know a lot of people just can't move forward until where they're at is right. And if that were me, then I think I'd be much more attuned to the negativity of that voice than I am when really the goal is just to, like, get it down and then work it and then rework it. And then it's almost like a sculpting kind of approach.
Yeah, that's exactly how I do it. I sentence at a time, and I'm trying to craft that sentence until it works, and then move on to the next one. And it's a slow, it's like a crawl, because sometimes you get lucky and hit a good vein, but a lot of times you're just like trying to make something work and it just is not coming.
Right.
And you can't progress past that point. Not that you can't, but I don't, because of what I tell myself. And it's really frustrating.
Yeah, I get it. Because my brain, writing aside, just will, you know, as we've talked many times, it'll just pick on kind of an innocuous moment and then just perseverate on the negative implications of that moment over and over for days and days and days and days and days.
Right.
If that were to happen in my writing, I would stop writing that thing.
Right. Yeah.
Because at that point, the well's poisoned, right?
Yeah, it's taken over, and it's hard to get back to a place where you feel like there's value in that effort.
My solution were that to happen, it probably has in the past, I can't think of examples, would be to write something else.
Right. Place where this shows up for me a lot, that's maybe even more distressing for me, is in my teaching and my work life. The inner critic voice is strongest there, and it's the most destructive there, too. Because I will do the same process with my lesson plans and assignments and feedback for students and all kind of stuff, like this process that lens or filter of, well, you're not doing a good enough job here, and like you're bad at your job, and you're failing these students, and you're failing yourself, and so on. It's really harsh, and I've been trying to work on that more lately, and have been doing some interesting things in therapy to work with that. I recognize it too, because it's the same feeling. There's that Ira Glass quote that helps with this. I think I tell students this a lot. And I can't listen to it myself, because that's one of those things where I can tell you what to do, but I can't hear it myself. You probably know it, where he talks about, you know, if you are at all creative or like have that kind of interest in doing something creative, you're also probably a good reader or consumer of those things too. And your critical mindset is more well developed than your creative mindset. Like your critical voice is a lot sharper because you hone it faster in school, whereas your critical or your creative voice takes a bit more time to come along. So writing, for instance, you're a better reader before you're a good writer. As you write your stuff, you know how bad it is. And all you can tell yourself is, this sucks. It doesn't hold up to what I think is good writing, because you know what good writing looks like. And so you just kind of beat yourself up constantly. And his advice is, if you can get past that point, it becomes a lot easier. Like, once you let yourself tolerate a draft that is not any good, because your voice tells you it is, you'll eventually learn to get drafts that are better and better. And eventually, your creative voice will meet your critical voice at some, or close to it at least. So you're not shutting yourself down preemptively because you know it could be better. That's the Dybbuk thing you were talking about earlier, is exactly that, right? It's like, I know I'm not as good as Dybbuk, and I'll never, ever be that good. The challenge is to give yourself enough permission to keep trying or do something, to do your own work, and not have to have it be Dybbuk.
Right. Be satisfied at whatever level you get to.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's, so back to the publishing thing, like part of that, maybe response to that sort of narrative that I share is, well, so if it gets published in a dinky journal and two people read it, then it's two more people than read it than if you hadn't written it, right? And
also look down Dybbuk's list of credits. There's a lot of shit bird
totally
nothing journals. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's there's never going to be a leap. Maybe never, but there's really going to be a leap from nobody to beloved. Right. So you have to sort of have those steps along the way. And if part of doing that is that it makes you feel good to get something published, then that's great.
Right.
But if also not at the same time, also great. Like, that's not interesting to you or doesn't sort of have the same value, then, you know, share it with us and we'd be happy to talk about it. But it's challenging. It's debilitating condition, I think. I think it is a condition. It's like overdefined, overly exercised critical voice. Like it's the strongest muscle I have in my body is the one that tells me that I suck. Well, do we suck? Listeners, tell us. Become our external critical voices. Let us know on Twitter what you think about this. What does your internal critic say? Have you had success in silencing it? Our sort of strategies of coping mechanisms? This has become a therapy podcast, which I am totally in favor of.
It was inevitable, really.
Let us know there or in emails, yakbabiespodcast@gmail.com is where you can find us. Also on patreon.com/yakbabies for $1 a month. You can hear maybe why we have these critical voices because of all the insanity and madness going on there. There are some recent Bro to Bros that are shocking, among other things there. So check that out for $1 a month. There's plenty of fun and enjoyment to be had there on Patreon. Yes, until then, Yak Babies, yakking off.
The Yak Babies wish to thank all the personal pals who listen each week, and most especially to send extra thanks to all who have supported on Patreon past and present, including Michael, Bonnie, Sebastian, and William Howard Taft.